Hello everyone, and thanks for joining today's webinar about the NIS2 Directive. My name is Cecile Giloy, and I will be managing today's session. Before we get started, I have some housekeeping notes. First, I want to point out the questions module within the ON24 platform. We welcome you to enter your questions at any point during the presentation, and if time allows, we will answer whatever questions we can at the end of the session. You can always adjust the size of the media player to make it bigger or smaller, depending on your preference. And finally, please note that this session is being recorded and we'll share a link to the session after we wrap up today. Now I'm going to pass it over to our presenters. With us today, we have David, our Vice President Product Marketing at Anaptys, Konstantin, Senior Consultant Cybersecurity at KPMG, and Vincent, Cybersecurity and Data Protection Specialist at SAP. These three speakers will explain the key changes to the NIS directive and share strategies needed to navigate this evolving regulatory landscape. And with that, I will hand it over to our first speaker, David.
Thank you, Cecile. I am thrilled to be joined by two wonderful experts that we see right here. Konstantin, I'd like to give you a quick opportunity to just introduce yourself, and then we'll move to Vincent. I'll make a quick intro, and then we have a couple of interesting slides to kick us off. So
sure.
Konstantin.
Thank you, David. So hi, I'm Konstantin, a senior consultant at KPMG located in Germany, and my focus topics are SAP security for SAP products, and at the same time, of course, helping my clients to get around cybersecurity regulations. And currently in Europe, of course, this is NIS2, and these two worlds are quite an interesting, let's say, combination that can be explored in this webinar. And up to you, Vincent.
Thank you, Konstantin. Vincent Dou. So I'm working within SAP in a department specialized on GRC and security. So governance, risk compliance, and security topics, which is the core of the NIS2 regulation. And I'm based in Paris. And I'm very happy to have this discussion today.
Excellent. I'm David DePerl. I'm the Vice President of Product Marketing here at Anaptys. I'm based in Boston, Massachusetts, United States. And Anaptys focuses on application level security for SAP. So with that, we'd love to really just dive in and talk a little bit more about NIS2. Now, I think to start, let's level set a little bit about what we're talking about. So NIS2 is an update of the prior 2016 EU directive, NIS, which was for cybersecurity. Now, the goals of this particular transformation in NIS2, or this new update, is to really update those cybersecurity requirements and provide better consistency to combat the more recent threats that we've been seeing in the marketplace, including supply chain attacks. So, you know, increasing cyber resilience here across a newly expanded set of sectors has become even more paramount of importance during this particular time since the last directive NIS was established in 2016. Additionally, there were some challenges from the original NIS directive that we were looking to correct with NIS2. And so this creates additional opportunities for cybersecurity parity across all of the EU member states and hopefully prevents any sort of regulatory arbitrage, right? So now who's going to be affected? All of the EU member states and the 15 sectors of critical infrastructure and essential services are all going to be affected by this new directive. And that comes out to be roughly about 160,000 different companies, I think, is really where they've placed that. Now, the EU directive entered into force as of January of 2023, but we're currently undergoing what's called transposition. And so the member states have until literally the 17th of this month to transpose those measures effectively and efficiently into national law. Now, what you see up on the screen right here are some of the major differences that there are in NIS2 versus in the original NIS from 2016. Now, I touched on a little bit of these, but let's dive a little bit deeper here. So more companies must comply. Your original 2016 directive had a smaller set of industries and sectors and companies. This has been expanded out considerably. And so now you have two different categories for entities that are in scope. You have those that are essential, which are your most critical entities, and you have those that are important, which are slightly less critical, but as the name implies, obviously very important. Now, your important entities are sometimes adjacent industries or companies to those essential categories. So, for example, it'll include digital providers, communications. There's a lot of increased dependencies between these companies and those essential entities. And so, you know, you're looking at large enterprises here or medium enterprises included in scope. Now, as we look at the next section here, we're talking about new baseline security measures. One of the larger challenges that, you know, we faced with the original NIST directive was that there was little bit of room for interpretation. One member state could interpret a directive one way, another member state could represent it in a completely different way. And that created disparity across all the different member states and created opportunities for companies to potentially game the system a little bit. So now what you have is you have more specific controls that are being put into place, more specific requirements, and it's reducing the opportunity for that lack of parity here. And it's increasing our ability for everyone to have a more consistent set of cybersecurity across all of the member states of the European Union. Additionally, we've gotten very tight with regards to timelines for incident reporting. So whereas there were a few, again, open to interpretation opportunities before with those national security agencies, now you have very tight timelines where if there is a material incident of any sort, you have to report this out within about 24 hours. There's new increased accountability for management, where managers themselves can be held liable for breaches. There are potential fines that number in the millions of euros, and they're very, very steep. Coming from America, where we're a little bit nicer on that particular front and possibly creates a few more opportunities there for gaming the system. It's interesting to see how strict these rules are, where your essential administrative fines come out to be about 10 million euros or 2% of global annual revenue, whichever one is higher. And then for your important industries, it's about 7 million euros or about 1.4% of your global annual revenue. So these are very strict penalties. And the idea here is to really stress the importance of cybersecurity and compliance here in the marketplace. And then, of course, we have these penalties for non-compliance. And, you know, this is sort of what I talked about, but more specifically, these criminal sanctions. This is a very interesting component here where NIST2 is including measures to hold the top management personally liable and responsible for any sort of gross negligence in the event of a security incident. So these are very strict rules, which shows that the EU is taking cybersecurity and compliance very, very seriously moving forward in response to a larger number of threats that have manifested themselves over the past 6 years or so since the prior directive. And so as you can see here, we'll leave this up throughout the entire webinar, but really, you know, these are some of the key differences that you're seeing between NIS and NIS2. And, you know, we've talked about a few of these already, but you can see a little bit looser on the NIS side, much tighter on the NIS2 side. So with this in mind, I think what I'd love to do is just kick off to my wonderful round table of experts here and just really ask, you know, what are your initial thoughts around all these updates from NIS to NIS2? Constantine, Vincent, whoever would like to jump in?
Well, I can start if you like. I mean, to be honest, my initial thoughts was like, well, it was about time. So I think we still see, sorry to sound that rude maybe, but to be honest, it's like I still see that main motivators behind getting behind cybersecurity for companies is one typical motivator is some kind of attack a company or an organization experienced. So after a ransomware attack, usually companies are quite keen to improve their security posture. That's one way. that's unfortunately the quite stressful version of getting motivated to do in this topic. And the other way, of course, a motivator is, of course, if the regulator comes around the corner and says that you have to take care of cybersecurity. So when you look at the NIS2 directive, I mean, if you as a company think that cybersecurity is important and you already have been thinking about cybersecurity in the last years or even decades, I mean, there's nothing completely new in there. Of course, NIS2 has its specifics. NIS2 has certain aspects that are new, but in the end, if you already, let's say, took general best practices for cybersecurity and try to adapt it to your company, in a broad sense, you can already say, okay, I mean, there won't be anything completely new in there.
Yeah, so completely agree.
First impression I got.
Completely agree with you, Konstantin. Maybe the additional element that NIS2 is bringing is that it's not only taking care about security, putting some efficient control over your critical application and assets. It's also a risk management process that need to be deployed over these specific security topics. So, it's not only an issue for the IT team, but security is for every department, every people involved. And so the risk can be everywhere. So it's also a way to think about this cybersecurity risk, how to assess it, how to communicate on it, and how to map the risk and the control that are already deployed in an efficient way to be able to see if it's pertinent, if it's efficient, if it's complete enough.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say it feels like it's a forcing function, right? Like that's what this is. It's a way to ensure that security and compliance becomes not just the responsibility of your InfoSec department, but rather becomes part of your critical DNA as an organization, right? Constantine,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
One point I want.
Yeah, please.
Don't worry. That's like it happens, especially in the digital webinar world. one thing I just wanted to add to you, Vincent, as well as like I want to stress as well as the effectiveness. Like NIS2 really wants that you are effective and that you can prove that your ISMS or whatever you're choosing to name it or use it or organize it, that is effective and that you take care of it. And so that's just a very important point that you have to keep in mind, that it's not only about writing nice policies. It's also how do you ensure that these policies are effectively implemented, deployed, and tested, and are constantly improving your security posture.
Really an optimization cycle that the regulation is pushing. It's not a one-time work and then I'm done. It's a continuous process, and the regulation push to have this kind of continuous process for your own good. Regulation is just there to help you to have good practice for security. So, it's important because we all know that the context is evolving very quickly, and that it's a major concern for, it should be a major concern for every organization, in fact.
Do you think that, you know, we're talking about these differences between NIS and NIS2. Do you think that perhaps in 2016 with the original NIS, the EU was trying to be a little bit more hands-off and say, look, here's some guidelines for you. We'd like you to do this. And NIS2 strikes me as more of the, okay, you're grounded now because you didn't actually do the things that you probably should have been doing. Is this something you gentlemen have seen in your own practices when talking to, you know, anybody, other companies in the market?
I think, in fact, you could say that. I mean, to be honest, I'm not quite sure about the motivation of the legislator here. I'm a little bit too far away from the EU Parliament here. But sure. But I think definitely that it can be seen. I mean, there's always a reason why they want to update something like this. And probably it was after, I think, 8 years, they said, looking from the sideline, it seems that without the proper regulation and the proper, let's say, let's make the air a little bit thinner for entities that we think should be considering cybersecurity a little bit more important than they seem to do.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, as you explained at the beginning, Konstantin, some companies are very aware because they experience it, but it's very painful. So I think the regulator is just trying to explain it's a critical element that need to be considered by every organization. So please help yourself and do it before you have the ransomware attack, which is just an example. There is a lot of other type of attack, but in the media we heard about it a lot, and it's very painful. It can kill you, you know. So I think the regulator here is really trying to improve the overall level of security measure for every organization to help to raise the standards around security.
Yeah, I think Konstantin mentioned the effectiveness. You mentioned the optimization. It's all about these improvements in the face of these larger threats going out there. I mean, I know that, you know, the directive in theory entered into force in January of 2023. Transposition is happening as we speak, going live across all the member states next week. I'm assuming many companies might be looking at this with fresh eyes right now because January 2023, so long ago, don't even remember what I was doing in January 2023. So, you know, to you gentlemen, like what stands out is maybe one of the biggest newsworthy updates here in NIST2 that we're seeing. Konstantin, I'll ask you to.
Well, I think the, let's say, most important first thing for NIST2 is like the let's say, the requirement for an overarching risk management, cybersecurity risk management. And that's where, I mean, especially in the world of SAP, where we're currently like located here, this is very interesting because I see with most of my clients that the world of SAP is quite, let's say, exclusive in many senses, and meaning that usually the SAP universe is quite, let's say, not very connected with the overarching risk management of a company. I mean, most companies have like a general risk management with financial risks, legal risk, whatever, what kind of risk they do. They have like an IT security, cybersecurity risk management, but most of the times SAP is not integrated. NIST2 doesn't care about whether it's SAP, Microsoft, or whatever. They just say the company itself, the organization needs a connected, effective risk management touching all of your organization. So these kind of silos that you usually encounter in companies, these are, I think, quite a big challenge from many clients, and that's like a big change within NIST2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, that's a difficulty for a lot of customers, I think, because as you said, the SAP internal SAP world is isolated from the other departments sometimes, and even in the IT, you have the IT SAP team and the other IT team. So. Yeah. And here, the one of the challenge of NIST2 is that everybody will have to talk together first, so to agree on what are the risks, have put in place a common vocabulary, put in place some common framework that can be shared by everybody, and that's something that will be new for some companies that are not used to this kind of exercise. So. Yeah. The point will be how to break the silo, put the SAP specialist, SAP security experts, SAP basis guy in contact with the broader security team, but not only with the security team, also with the compliance team, with the internal control, with the internal audit. They all need to be agree on what need to be done, how the risk will be name and documented, and what will be the process to assess them. And then they need to agree on what are the control, how do we report on it, what will be the frequency? Because again, it's not a one-time exercise, it's a continuous process. So it's, yeah, it can change a lot of governance models that are currently in place in some company. And that's, I think, the major impact, in fact, how to adapt the governance model to put in place this kind of risk management process.
Yeah, like a typical question here I get from clients at that point usually is like, well, we already have an ISO 27001 certificate, we're fine, right? Well, and as a consultant, I do my typical answer, that is, it depends. In terms of the ISO 27001 certificate, usually the most interesting thing is, okay, and what was the scope, or what is the scope of your ISO 27001 certificate? Of course, the topics in there, these are all relevant topics for NIS2. However, most of the time, the scope is not the whole organization. It's maybe only a certain portion of it. Are the SAP systems in there? Maybe. Is the whole organization with all the, let's say, subsidiaries? Sorry for this, I'm butchering this word. Are these in there as well? And this is like, first thing, that's a challenge, because NIS2 doesn't think in scope. It thinks in the whole entity should do this. And again, you can be compliant with, for example, ISO 27001 without being compliant with certain aspects of NIS2. For example, the one example we see here on the current slide, like this significant incidents must be reported within 24 hours. Even with a ISO 27001 certificate, usually the auditor doesn't look like, of course, you might have some kind of incident reporting process in place, but whether it fits into the NIS2 requirements, that's another story.
I was going to say that was the thing that popped out the most here for me, was the incident reporting requirements. I mean, significant ones must be reported within 24 hours, detailed follow-up reports within 72 hours, final report within 1 month. To your point, Constantine, if you don't have SAP included as part of your general incident response plan or your processes there, that's going to be pretty challenging for organizations, I would imagine.
Usually, yes, because I think most of the times, I mean, companies or the SAP landscape is, if I encounter a company that already has, let's say, a monitoring in place for the application level of SAP systems, they are already, let's say, a little bit ahead of the curve, because some companies don't even have that. They have, of course, on network level. Usually, that's something that is quite like the typical IT world. That's usually covered, but let's say the application level of SAP systems, and if you don't have something in place for monitoring, it's quite hard to be aware of any incident and to have the proper processes in place to like get through the chain of let's say analysis to alerting to investigating to okay, now we need to report it. I mean, one thing I have to, or I want to point out here, I mean, NIS2 says after you are aware of an incident, you need to report it within 24 hours. So I already had creative customers who said like, well, if we never look, we're never aware of it. So so the 24 hours never count for us, right? And I said like, well, I'm not a legal advisor here, but I would be very, let's say, careful with this kind of interpretation. Any company. but if you like, I mean, I'm not the regulator, but please take a look at the let's say at the chances of fines you might get if you don't report significant incidents on time. So I wouldn't recommend doing this kind of interpretation. And
exactly. No, but and we focus on this specific requirement, but there is other requirement in NIS2 that also ask you to have processes to identify and report. So it's not only if I don't look, everything will be okay. No. NIS2 has been defined to force you also to improve the monitoring aspect. So you have to check your system, you have to identify vulnerability, you have to reduce the number of vulnerability over your critical application, you need to monitor any exploit, any intrusion. So yeah, you need to do your job, you need to do your basic security job, The point is that you have to do it on SAP also and not on your critical, your typical historical scope of IT infrastructure. No, we go to the application level and we go to SAP too. So that's also a driver we are seeing now. NIS2 is a driver for putting SAP in the SOC scope. SOC for a security operating center. So most of the time, SAP was not included in this scope for cybersecurity tooling, process, and governance model that are already in place at customer side. With NIS2, SAP should also be there because it's a critical application. 100%. And because of the SAP nature, yes, it's specific. It can be seen as a it can be seen as a black box by security specialists because they don't know the SAP world. So the point is really, how can we connect the dots? How can we help organization to make this this junction, this communication between security specialists and SAP specialists to be able to include SAP in the SOC and to have broader processes?
Yeah, Vincent, I want to jump on that for a quick second. So, you know, you're right. I think this is a good driver to get SAP into the SOC, whereas prior you might have looked at it and been like, well, it's, you know, over there. And Constantine, you talked a little bit about the ISO 27001 certifications that maybe perhaps it wasn't in scope, right? So, you know, Vincent, I'll start with you, but I think you started along this path, but how can, you know, your SAP security, your basis, and your auditing teams really collaborate to ensure that you're being comprehensive with your compliance and your risk management pieces? Because they are siloed, right? It has been a challenge in the past.
So there is no magic, but there is a pass again. Security is a pass by itself. So maybe first of all, review the SAP security policy by itself. Start with SAP. What is the SAP security policy? Do you have one? If you don't, maybe check the recommendation from SAP. We have documentation. We have security baseline. We can help you with just some good documentation about it, but you have to do that work on the SAP world. And then once you have that, talk with the real cybersecurity expert that work on the infrastructure level and work on common vocabulary because you will need to, create communication channel and a governance model. So you need to understand each other. So that's the basic part. List, document, and share the information with your peers.
Right. Start meeting them over coffee, start having conversations. Let's start pulling this together. Yeah. Constantine, what do you think?
I mean, NIS2 uses the nice word of the basic cyber hygiene measures you should implement. I had quite a lot of very philosophic discussions with what this exactly means. I mean, in the end, you can think about it like we all learned, or maybe as of 2024, I mean, a basic hygiene in the world of humans usually means that something like, I don't know, I should wash my hands after I was at the toilet. So, I mean, the basic things are really like, it boils down to things like, okay, when do you apply patches to your SAP landscape if you're still like taking care of this on your own? How do you harden your systems? How, like, the very basic things you should, where there's quite a lot of information out there how to do this. And I mean, NIS2 doesn't say you need to do everything. It doesn't necessarily say do it with a tool, but to be honest, like in a proper complex SAP landscape, and usually SAP landscapes are very big and very complex, without a tool, very hard to achieve like a proper security posture, because I mean, SAP basis usually has quite enough work to do already. If you would try to get them to do even more work now for security without proper tooling, challenging, I would say, as a consultant.
Yeah,
that's really important. You know, I want to touch on that in a second, but I'm curious. So, Constantine, so you know, would you say it's I'm sure some of your clients, some other people who are listening to this webinar might be saying, huh, I wonder if there's a more minimum way that I can start and then scale up. So, you know, they might be thinking, maybe we just lead with some compliance to NIST2, and others are saying, well, should we revisit our security in general and then have compliance be a byproduct of that good security governance? Do you have any opinions there based on, you know, your how you recommend things to clients and your conversations there?
Well, I'm afraid the honest answer is, again, it depends. I think if I'm sitting with a client at the beginning, I mean, let's say a very quick win usually can be if there are, like, the first thing I usually ask is, like, are there any ongoing security related projects already? Mm-hmm. Maybe there is some kind of authentication reversal or revisit project already ongoing, and use these already ongoing projects. Maybe they don't like that you, like, knock on their door and say, like, hey, how about of a little bit of, let's say, an addition to your scope. But this is, like, usually can be, let's say, quick win, because then you leverage on already existing initiatives, because most of these topics, they are not completely new. I mean, sure, NIST2 has, we already talked about some of its specifics, or let's say specific awareness things or learning courses for the top level management. Yes, this is NIST2 specific that you need to take a look at. But other things, usually most companies already have something on. There's an ongoing project for network segmentation. There might be an ongoing project for enhancing or, like, let's say, enforcing multi-factor authentication for critical accounts or something like that. So, I mean, many of these things are already in the drawer, let's say, and sometimes or even ongoing. So this can be a neat way to start without kicking off a gigantic NIST2 project or let's say a complete revisit of the current way of doing things.
Right. Yeah, so I think what, maybe just to complete what Constantine said, yes, before going into any new initiative, list and audit what you already have done. What are the foundation you are started with? Because that's exactly will help you to drive what need to be that what still need to be done. You know, the bigger the step will be depends on where you are starting from. Exactly as I said, Constantine. So if you already have a SAP security policy defined, and one advice, you know, any SAP customer can use what we call the early watch alert report. Mm-hmm. It's a quick way to check if your SAP system are configured in a secure way following the best practice or not. If you never do that, yeah, the step will be high, because most of the time, the first time you run the report, you have a lots of red flag everywhere. But if you are used to this exercise, yes, you will know where you need to work on the SAP scope.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. From the Anapsys side, I know that, you know, when you first turn it on and you see everything, you're like, ah, what's going on, right? But, you know, for example, some of our tooling will help you narrow the scope down considerably and be like, these are the ones that you really should be addressing. You could probably put some compensating controls here and not worry about that, or, you know, do a couple other things in that particular way. Building on that, I was going to ask you, you know, Vincent, like, where, I think you might be touching on it already, but I'm going to formally ask you, in your experiences, in your conversations, where do you think some companies make their biggest mistake when they think about securing SAP? Is it biting off more than they can chew, trying to boil the ocean, or?
But there is the two standard situation. The one who said, I manage security because I have a very good authorization model in my ERP, so I manage security. And the point is that, authorization, it's part of security, but it's not the only domain for SAP security. There is a lots of other things that need to be checked, how you configure the system, how you connect the system, a lot of things. So, and the other part, yes, it's let's go and let's try to do everything at the same time. No, you have to determine where do you start and go bit by bit, address the major risk first, have some quick wins. There is potentially some quick wins that will reduce the footprint for security on your SAP system, and go bit by bit. And there is also tools that can help you, because for sure there is no magic, but we are working in software. There is ways to accelerate. There is some tools that comes with a very good pre-configured content to help you to identify the weakness, and that propose some typical best practices to win time, you know, to have less people involved internally. As Constantine said, the IT basis guy, the guy who administrates the SAP system, has already a lot of things to do. So tools and solution can be an accelerator, but it will never be the magic solution that will do everything by itself. It's an accelerator.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. And it helps to, let's say, give you, or from the unknown vulnerabilities, it gets to the known vulnerabilities. And so you can already start to do at least a plan. So that's important, because it sheds light into the darkness of certain SAP aspects. I mean, usually these kind of landscapes, most of the time, the landscapes do not look the way they look today, because someone said at the beginning and said, like, okay, how to make a secure architecture. These are usually quite organic architectures that, let's say, developed over decades even. Mm-hmm. So we always emphasize, I mean, well, I'm not a regulator, so nobody exactly knows how exactly NIS2 checks will be currently. Correct. However, like, it's always better if someone appears and audits you and say, like, oh, you're not NIS2 compliant right now. It's always better to already say, yes, sure, we know that, but we have already, like, here we have our top priorities. We have to already started this initiative. We added this thing to this initiative. It's always better than saying, yes, we know. Right. Do you do something about it? Well, let's figure something out. Because if you can already present something and say, like, okay, we have, like, a proper roadmap for our security, I would say this is always better than just like giving the blanks stare back at the auditor or whoever will arrive. Another way I wanted to add, or another thing I just thought about, was, like, Vincent, you said about the we already do roles and authorizations. Another thing I quite usually hear, well, I work for KPMG, but in the consulting part, not in the audit part. So they are independent from me. But another thing that we always encounter also is, our auditor already, like, our one of the big four is already looking at our security for SAP, because they do it for their auditing of us. And then usually I'm like, well, first of all, I'm not an auditor. Secondly, well, their focus is different. So usually they, in terms of the overarching IT security, that's not their focus. I mean, their IT general controls and SOC 2 reports and whatever, they touch certain aspects of security, but not the overarching technical IT security of SAP landscapes. So there I would say, still, even if they don't give you, like, the bulletproof, I'm compliant with NIS2 because a big four said that, or another auditing firm said that, gave their thumbs up in terms of our security, because they usually, I mean, their focus is usually roles and authorizations in the SAP landscape.
Yeah, very different. You know, we always say good compliance is great, but it's not necessarily equating to good security, right? And so compliance is arguably more of a byproduct of good security, and hopefully they're, again, different focuses there. What's interesting to me, and I'm going to pull it back a little bit to what I see here with NIS2, someone saying, well, the auditors say I'm okay, or I've got the certification, or Constantine, I think you mentioned one of your clients was like, well, what can I get away with here? You know, do I have to, like, close my eyes and maybe not see it? Do you guys have any thoughts on the personal liability, the accountability now for managers and the executives, those new penalties for non-compliance, they seem pretty steep. You know, is it too much? Any concerns? Is it just right? You know, Constantine, maybe I'll start with you since you had kind of like started your thought already on that. And maybe if you wanted to dovetail into this.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I want to make clear that I encountered clients who were like, where their management was like, let's say a little bit like, well, I'm always responsible for everything. I'm already halfway into the prison. So what changes? Clients that say like something like this are usually advised to go to their internal legal team or get some legal advice whether NIS2 really didn't change anything in terms of their liability. And like most of the clients I do, then they realize, well, nope, the legal team usually say there's quite a significant changes in terms of personal and financial liability that you encounter. And to be honest, I think it is important because, and it is unfortunately one way to, let's say, trigger a little bit of motivation. Because if management is not behind cybersecurity and there is no one dedicated and say like, this is an important topic, this is someone from SAP basis, he's not able to achieve the proper, let's say, or get the proper budgets approved or the proper tooling if no one in management sees the point. Because I'm afraid this is one way to get the motivation. And we always see if there is no one in management on C-level or to like behind and responsible and feels responsible and thinks this is important, a chief information security officer won't like will run against walls because it's hard.
I think it's a way to show that it's an important topic and organization has to do something because I know some organizations who think cybersecurity is an enabler for profit, you know, but it's not all. Still, the majority of organizations think the security is a cost and just a cost. So, if you want to improve, if you want to optimize, if you want to secure and use the cybersecurity as an enabler for your business, which it is always. Because once you have a ransom attack or a data leak, you see what is the cost of bad cybersecurity. So I think the regulator here is using this high penalties and sanction as a really a way to move things.
Yeah, very true. So speaking of optimization, and you know, Constantine, I think you started talking about this a little bit back ago, but effectiveness, right? And I think you touched slightly on automation. I kind of want to pull back there. I mean, you know, there's a lot that you can do, as you said, manually. There's a lot that good tools will help with as well. You know, could you give me some thoughts about how you have been advising clients or what you're seeing some of your clients doing to, you know, add some RPA, add some cybersecurity automation, some compliance automation in order to help improve their ability to respond to risk in their organizations?
Yeah, I mean, in the world of SAP, I mean, there are two school of thoughts. One is either I try to get my, let's say, already existing IT security world to understand SAP security in terms of automation, especially in the world of, let's say, security hardening, monitoring, and these things. That's one way, usually quite hard because the IT security tools you use usually or you encounter usually are not very good at speaking SAP, so to say. And the other way is, okay, we need special tools. And so usually I also advise or help clients to determine, okay, what tools fit to our needs. I mean, this is not, there's not one size fits all. And there are tools by SAP, there are tools by Onapsis, there are other tools as well. And all of these can definitely help for these kind of areas and other areas to, let's say, focus on the very important things, because the challenge is always is like there's, I mean, I think we already mentioned it. I mean, the to-do list will never end in terms of cybersecurity, and these kind of tools can give you like a proper way to give you a customized to-do list or a bucket list of things you should look at. And this is quite important, especially in the because they do it like automatically 24/7. I mean, most of the time that's they do it. They stay motivated, and people usually it's quite easier to get this like pre-filtered list of things you should do. So
Yeah, and maybe to add to what you said, Konstantin, yes, there is tools that will help to implement better security control and to automate them to make to put in place continuous control monitoring, which is very important to save time also and reduce the burdens of manual effort by the SAP teams. But the next challenge is that yes, it's a compliance issue, so you need to be compliant all the time. So you need to put in place controls that will verify that what you have is efficient and continue to be efficient over the time. And you need to share this information with people from internal control, from internal audit, from compliance team. So it's not only pure security tooling. That's the first step. Yes, it will help a lot. Second step is how to connect these tools with the tools that manage the internal control framework, that manage the risk management process, to have a real end-to-end process and to be able to report easily, because the cost when you have an audit is how can I show to my auditor that everything is under control? How can I show that the most quickly and the most efficient way? Yeah, tools and software can help you to do that too. So again, depending on your starting point, choose your path. It can help. And you can save money over the time with automation at multiple levels, at the control by itself, but also then at the risk assessment process, at the reporting process, at the monitoring process.
Yeah. And in the best case, just something I want to add, I agree with you, Vincent. In the best case scenario, you don't have to do anything extra for any auditor. So everything you do just for your like on an operational level for your security, this is so well, let's say, documented or monitored or locked with a tool that the only thing you need to give the auditor is either access to a certain tool or, let's say, export something from a tool. Because usually I encounter that clients, they start the minute I ask for something, they start to collect it. And it's like, great. But now you have the quite annoying task of getting all the information into the right place. And if you do it monthly or quarterly or whatever, anyways, like you wouldn't have any work or much less.
And today it's NIS2. Maybe tomorrow there will be a new regulation, a new certification process, and you will have again to do the same kind of work. So exactly. Yeah. One process, one repository, one common framework that can address all your need and all your requirements. That should be your target.
This has been a wonderful conversation. We're going to try to, I think, wrap this up a little bit. But before I do, what I'd like to do is get some, let's call it parting advice from both Konstantin and Vincent. And I'm going to ask you to maybe structure it in kind of a fun way. So, where should they start with NIS2 compliance? What should they potentially stop doing, and anything that they should keep doing, right? So a start, stop, keep on doing kind of thing. So I'll give you a couple seconds to think about that. In the meantime, I'll encourage anybody who's on this actual webinar, if there are any questions, you know, pop them into the Q&A window, and we'll try to get to them, if we have the time to do so. So with that, Vincent, I'm going to start with you. What should they start doing for NIS2 compliance? What should they stop thinking about doing? And what should they keep doing that they're doing pretty well?
So they should start by checking what they are already doing.
Yep.
and they should stop create new plan for every new requirement, every new regulation, every new certification process that occur, because it will just multiply the silo.
Yep.
And so if they are already have some best practices in security, just reuse what you are already doing and map it to the requirement for NIS2. That's the best starting point to see where you need to work and where you need to create new thing. But stop creating new thing all the time. You just lost time and money finally.
I love that. Constantine.
Oh, no, it's hard for me to get something useful out, but I will try it. So let's start. To be honest, it's like looking, maybe it's quite similar. It's like looking, the one thing I already said, look at what you're already doing, what is already ongoing in your company, and just leverage on that and try to document it. I mean, as always, it's like, well, that's maybe my auditor DNA. It's like, if it's not documented, it's not there. So at least, I mean, it shouldn't be a gigantic policy. It doesn't need to be a gigantic policy that no one reads. It's documented in a way that is comprehensible for a third person. Stop thinking about NIS2 as the one and only thing that I need to care about now. I mean, NIS2, as Vincent already said, that's the current regulation. In 10 years or in 5 years, it might be NIS3 or another regulation in another country that you're operating in, and try to get everything, like all the basics for cybersecurity that all of us know, that are either in ISO 27001 or NIST cybersecurity framework described. These things, I mean, the regulations orient themselves on these things. So keep on track with these, let's say, basics, and keep doing, keep updating. I don't know. That's like the last thing I want
good.
To say.
Just keep on updating, keep on patching, keeping on doing the security hygiene that is so foundational, but sometimes not as sexy as other security things that we do. Gentlemen, it's been a wonderful conversation. This has been a real joy, one of my favorite sessions I've ever done. Cecile, I'm going to hand it back to you and see, and you can take us home.
Perfect. Thank you very much to the three of you. That was a really, really great discussion, and I think a lot of insights were shared. And we do have some questions, so let me start with the first one. Should organizations use NIS2 as an opportunity to overhaul their security practices, or should they focus on just meeting compliance requirements?
I mean, I can start with this. I think we might have covered a little bit of this in the conversation already. I am of the firm belief that good security will then lead to good compliance. But in the words of Constantine, I think it depends. And so perhaps every situation is a little different. Gentlemen?
No, completely agree with what you said.
Yeah, you can try to dodge the NIS2 bullet, but probably the next cybersecurity regulation will come.
Yeah, and you just expose yourself, in fact, because you expose it to cyber attack or to insider threat, and on top of it, you potentially expose yourself to big fines. So,
yeah, big fines.
Awesome, thank you. Getting to the next one, where do you think most companies fall short in securing SAP environments, especially in light of NIS2?
Well, again, I can start. What we've frequently seen is that it's that siloed situation that I think Vincent was speaking so well about, where, you know, you have disparate teams that aren't necessarily communicating well, possibly duplicating efforts, things along those lines. And so I think having them work more coherently together, having that ability to be that Rosetta Stone and connect those two teams who speak very different languages, quite frankly, and having them coordinate a lot better will probably go a long way, especially in improving their ability to adhere to the new NIS2 requirements, but also just be better in general in SAP security. Getting a few nods. Yeah. All right, let's go.
Okay, then going to the next one. Considering the changes in reporting timelines, what do you think companies should consider focusing on with regards to incident response efforts?
Interesting.
First, to check if they have a process, maybe. And is this process documented? That's the basic, you know? Review the documentation. Yeah. Most of the time, there is something. You don't start from nothing. But at least verify that the documentation is still up to date. So that can be a good starting point.
And another thing I would like to add here is, most companies have some kind of incident response process already in place. And I mean, the NIST 2 specifics are about the, let's say, quite short time period you have. So, I mean, if you already have some, and you already have to report certain things, maybe for other regulations or in other, like in Europe, let's say, for example, if you have something with personal identifiable information problems or breaches, you already have to notify in terms of data privacy, GDPR things. So maybe you can leverage again on an already existing process, improve it, enhance it, and look whether, okay, how long usually did it take to make this kind of, let's say, report? Are we already more or less in a good time zone, or is it usually taking months until we report something, and then it might be something we should improve.
Yeah, I'll just build on this and say, you know, I think it's extraordinarily important to ensure that SAP is part of that scope. And I think, Constantine, you talked about this a little bit earlier. You know, if SAP is not part of this scope, and if you already have an established incident response process, you have to figure out a way to get that capability or that domain somehow integrated into the existing process. And Vincent, to your point, I don't think you have to rebuild everything from scratch all the time. Take what's already working, find a way to get that domain in there. And this is where, you know, automation, real-time monitoring, things like that can really help you be a lot more efficient and then integrate that into your existing IR processes.
Awesome. I would say one last question before we wrap up. How should organizations approach the new personal accountability measures for executives? Could this lead to a cultural shift in leadership?
I'm going to leave this one to you, gentlemen, since you live in the European Union and I do not. So.
Well, I think the first step is tell them the proper way. So that's something that most clients... Yeah, it's like that's the first step. It's usually like, okay, who is now telling them that there is something that will change? Usually the way of working that I experience is the way of going through legal, because as soon as the internal or the, let's say, typical legal teams a company uses say like, oops, be careful, here changes something, that grabs the attention of the management and leadership. And, you know...
No, I think it's the good advice. Again, NIST2, it's not only for the IT team. It's not only for the sub-basis IT team. It's for everybody. It impacts lots of different departments in any kind of organization, and legal should be there for sure, because there is this, especially to explain the sanction, the penalty. This part is there, and it's their job to address in this compliance program for NIST 2. So don't forget, not only IT.
Perfect. Then I would say that brings us to time. For any other questions in the chat, we will be reaching out to you individually to get those answered. Also, just a brief reminder to everyone listening that this session has been recorded and the link to the recording will be emailed to you afterwards. And with that, thanks again to our speakers and to everyone for joining this briefing today, and have a great rest of your day. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.